From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Shocking murders in North Carolina last week. Three Muslim Americans with bright futures shot dead, execution style, allegedly by their neighbor, perhaps over a parking space. The tragedy shines a light on Muslim Americans again. It's a reality that comedian and actor Maz Jobrani knows well. To sell out crowds across the world, his jokes expose uncomfortable truths about what it's like to be a Muslim American, to be seen as the other, and laugh about it, maybe even think about it. This hour on Point, Middle East funny man Maz Jobrani. And joining me now from Los Angeles is Maz Jobrani. He recently released his third comedy special, I Come in Peace, which you can find on Netflix. He appeared in the films Friday After Next, 13 Going on 30, and The Interpreter. And many of our listeners know him as a regular guest on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. His new book is I Am Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV. Maz Jobrani, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's a real pleasure. I was watching I Come in Peace last night in Netflix, and I have to thank you for that. And I want to start off with a clip from that special. It aired on Showtime. Very funny. And this is a show that you did in Sweden. And I love the way you engage directly with the audience, including with a white Swedish guy named Eugene. So let's just listen to a minute of this.
Well, thank you, Eugene. We love you, and we're happy to have white people with us. It really helps. It helps us. Especially at the airport, if you could just follow us all at the airport. That would be great. We'd really like that.
Always good to have white people like Eugene accompanying you through the airport. It's a great moment in the show, and it's a great introduction to your comedy because you take on these serious subjects, racial profiling, racism, what it's like to be a Middle Eastern American in this world. But of course, you're really funny about it. Why is humor such a good way into these subjects?
Well, you know, first of all, let me just point something out. If there's any Iranians listening right now, they're probably screaming at the radio saying, we're white, we're white, because Iranians are actually white. We come from the Caucasus Mountains. We're the original Aryans. When I say that, you know, I always try to have fun with different races and different backgrounds in the show. And I think comedy is great because I think it disarms people. I think we can laugh together. You know, I do shows and there's Muslims and Jews sitting next to each other. There's Pakistanis and Indians sitting next to each other. And most likely these people were probably friends before they came in anyway, and they're open to it. But the point is for the world hopefully to see that, you know, if someone's watching this on Netflix or something, and seeing that, oh, these people coexist together, I think that that's a great message to send out there. And I think comedy is really good at disarming people and letting people just sit together, even if they're supposed to be sworn enemies.
It's a great – I love the way you work with directly with the audience. And you mentioned that you single people out. You ask if there are – you know, are there fellow Persians out there, and you have some banter with them. Then you want to know, what about a Palestinian? And then it's like, is there a Jew out there? It's like, oh, look, the Jew and the Palestinian are sitting right next to each other. It's just very, very funny stuff. Do you ever get people in the audience who just say, this is too, you know, too much? I'm shocked. I'm uncomfortable. I don't like this.
Not so much. I mean, it just depends. I mean, people that come to my show, I think, know what they're in for.
Sure.
They're pretty open-minded. Tends to be a pretty mixed crowd. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of Persians, but there's also some of everything. And depending on what city we're in, you know, that's the other thing. And the times that people are offended is whenever they take something out of context. So there's been times where I've been, you know, if you're watching the show and I'm making jokes about Iranians and making jokes about Indians and Pakistanis, and then I get to some jokes about, let's say, Saudis, and there's been times where the person's an older person who doesn't quite understand that, oh, I've been making fun of everybody, and in a fun way. I don't insult anyone. I don't sit there and go, oh, well, you people are worse than my people.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, for example, whatever it might be, it's me talking about my experiences in those places. I always have fun with the Lebanese because whenever I've gone to Beirut, I've made fun of the fact that they just celebrate life. They party a lot. And the first time I went to Lebanon was in 2007 with the Axis of Evil comedy tour. And at the time, they were having trouble choosing a president. But they were all having a great time partying. And I kind of made fun of that. I said, you guys don't even have a president and yet you're partying. And then I just went back this past December. And for whatever reason, they were having trouble choosing a president again. And so I started the set by saying, you guys, the first time I came here was 7 years ago and you didn't have a president. And I'm back and you still don't have a president. I'm like, get with it, Lebanon. But they got it. They laughed. They had a good time. You know.
You had a great line, by the way, in I Come in Peace about Lebanon. You said, you know things are going crazy in the Middle East when Lebanon is the most peaceful place in the Middle East. That got a big laugh.
Yeah, that was definitely. And that was filmed. I Come in Peace was filmed in 2012, I believe. So it was right after the revolutions in Egypt and all these different places. So Lebanon was really peaceful at that point. And I think, again, I think people get it. So the people that take offense at some stuff are either people that take it out of context and they don't realize that they're at a comedy club. Because I'm not that threatening in my conversations about different countries. Or there's been times, you know, during the Iraq war, when we went to war with Iraq, and I would do some Bush jokes. And that was very interesting because before the war started, Bush jokes were fine. On the eve of the war, some audience members were uncomfortable to laugh at Bush jokes because they'd bought into the line that the administration had put out there, which was if you criticize the war, you're criticizing the troops.
Right. Be careful what you say, we were told.
Exactly. And I remember specifically two or three times during my jokes where I would make fun of Bush, there was people that said, you can't make fun of our commander-in-chief at a time of war.
Well, it does raise an interesting question for comedians. And this is something that I've talked to comedians about over the years. I mean, when something truly awful happens, whether it's 9/11 or committing troops on the ground and so forth, you know, when does that sweet spot, when does that moment arrive when it's safe to talk about it, when it's okay to talk about it and make jokes about it?
Well, you know, I think it's not as important. The when is not as important as the who.
Mm-hmm.
You never make fun of the victims. You actually can get into a joke by having a serious moment before you go into it. I do some jokes about the Boston bombings, but I don't make fun of the victims. As a matter of fact, I start that bit by saying that I'd been in Boston a week before the Boston bombings. And when I heard about it, it really broke my heart. And my first thought was that my heart went out to the victims. And then I say that my second thought, though, was I was just praying, please don't be Middle Eastern. Please don't be Middle Eastern. And then that leads me into the jokes. And the jokes are all about how the media started portraying, before we knew who they were, the media was trying to figure out who it was. And if you recall, the New York Post put a picture of two Moroccans who happened to be wearing backpacks, and they put on their cover that said "bagmen" with a question mark, and they basically said these are the guys. And so the joke is making fun of the media coverage. It's not at all making fun of the victims, and it's making fun of the media coverage from being a person who comes from that part of the world and knows the biases that we see in the media. So I think the who is more important than the timing of it.
We're talking about the role of humor and world events, and sometimes talking about events that might make us uncomfortable, but humor has a way of penetrating into that conversation. So let me ask you about your new book. I love the title. I'm not a terrorist, but I played one on TV. It's about your life growing up in America and about your work. But let me ask you about the title, first of all.
Yeah, the title, you know, we had a little bit of back and forth because at first the publisher was a little wary of putting the big terrorist on the cover of a book. we kept going back and forth and they said, come up with other options. And I was coming up with things like, you know, traveling the world as a comedian, stand-ups and pat-downs from Tehran to Tiburon, from Iran with love. I mean, there was a ton of titles I was running through, and this one kept popping out to me. And the reason is because this it pertains to me. I played a terrorist in a Chuck Norris movie of the week, and I also played a terrorist on the TV show 24. Now, the Chuck Norris movie of the week, what was interesting was I did it when I had a day job at an advertising agency. I was just an assistant, and I got this part to do a Chuck Norris movie. And I thought to myself, you know, I'll take the part. This was very early in my career. I'll take the part, and it will help me take a step towards quitting my day job and getting full-time as an actor. And I thought to myself, I was playing an Afghan in America who was in Chicago to blow up a building. And this was before September 11th. So I thought to myself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show through my amazing acting talents why this guy is doing what he's doing. So I honestly convinced myself that somehow in a Chuck Norris movie, I could portray this terrorist in a way that will show the nuances. Why does he want to blow up this building? Even though it wasn't in the script, I was going to show it through my facial expressions. That's how good of an actor I thought I could be. And I guess I was a good enough actor that I convinced myself that I could do this. And the funny thing is, my dreams of this grandeur died when I went down to film it. And I can tell you more about it.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. Okay. We're talking with Iranian American actor and comedian Maaz Jobrani. You can join the conversation. What makes Maaz Jobrani's comedy work for you? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. سقفش آب میچیگه اندازه یه کیفه در و دیوارش کثیفه نه لوش داره نه قالی یخچالشم توش خالی تا خونه تو خیلی دوره ولی عوضش توش نوره برافرام برو برو. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Iranian-American comedian and actor Maaz Jobrani. His new book is I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, and we've got an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And Maaz Jobrani, before the break, you were just telling us an anecdote about an early acting job, including playing a terrorist in a Chuck Norris film. Sorry we cut you off there, but go ahead and finish that.
No problem. Yeah, so basically I thought maybe I could show through my acting why this guy is the Afghan trying to blow up a bomb in Chicago. So when I went down to the fitting, I went to the wardrobe fitting and they said, here's your shirt, here's your pants, and here's your turban. Yeah, and I said, oh, no. I said, Afghans in America don't wear turbans. Indian Sikhs wear turbans, but Afghans don't. And they said, well, we want you to wear a turban. I said, but no, I don't think an Afghan in America would be wearing a turban, especially if he's trying to blow up a building. He wouldn't be wearing a turban. And we got into this little discussion, and finally I said, listen, do me a favor. Just talk to the producers. Let them know I've done my research. Let's just get this right. And the poor wardrobe lady was like, okay, I'll tell them. So the next day I come to my trailer where the clothes are, and there's my shirt. There's the pants and there's a scarf. And I was like, aha. I go, see, I told you if you talk to them, they'll come up with a different solution. I have no problems wearing a scarf. And she was like, no, that's not the scarf. That's the turban. You got to wrap it around your head.
Message like, oh. Not received.
Yeah, so I wore the stupid turban.
Maaz Jobrani, let me play another clip. This is from your comedy special, I Come in Peace, filmed in Stockholm. And in this clip, you're talking about the home of your birth, Iran. Let's listen.
Iran always finds ways to get into the news. Yeah, as soon as there was a revolution in Egypt, the first thing Iran did, they sent ships into the Suez Canal. No reason. They're like, just go, go, go. Just go. Go. Just see what happens. Just go. When you get there, pull down your pants. Hello, America.
I love that. I'd love for you to talk about what it's like to bring this comedy to the Middle East, which you have done. You've performed all over the place as part of this Axis of Evil comedy tour. Tell us what that was like.
Yeah, you know, I've gone back several times as well. And when I went in 2007, it was me, Ahmed Ahmed, and Aaron Kader, who were the other creators of the Axis of Evil comedy tour, which ended in 2007. But when it first came out on Comedy Central, if you would have asked me, where do you think you'll perform a year from now outside of the United States, I would have told you England, Canada, and Australia, all the English-speaking countries.
Sure.
Well, 6 months after this came out, we get a call from some guys in Jordan. And they say, yes, we would like for you to come and do your show here in Jordan. And I was like, bro, I'd love to, but, you know, the show's in English. And he's like, yeah, I'm speaking English to you right now, you idiot. And I was like, oh, yeah, you guys speak English. And it didn't hit me that the rest of the world knows so much more about America than America knows about the rest of the world.
Right. And how did they respond? How did they respond to your comedy?
They were really into it. You know, when we first went out there, it was almost like this region was waiting for us. We became superstars just overnight by going there and doing shows. And it was kind of – there was a little bit of a it was the first time there was a group of American comedians going to the Middle East to perform for the people of the Middle East. And the promoters were a little nervous, and everywhere we went, the promoters would say, listen, talk about anything you want, but no sex, no religion, no politics. So we'd be like, all right, well then, hello and good night. right. You know, but we were able to navigate our way through that. When they said no sex, it was usually because when we do shows in the Middle East, it's an event. So sometimes families will bring their kids. So it's kind of like a TV-friendly set, you know. When they say religion in general, they just don't want you to talk about religion because some people are sensitive about it. And politics means no local politics. So you could be in Egypt and do jokes about the situation in Lebanon, but don't be in Egypt talking about the Egyptian leadership.
But did you feel – I'd love to ask you about this. And actually, I know you've got some thoughts about this. Did you feel – censored, or is it important to put this in perspective and maybe think about how comedians over time in America have also had to be have had to be careful about what they say?
Yeah, I think I put in perspective. You know, I talk about how Lenny Bruce, whatever, 50, 60 years ago was being arrested for things he was saying on stage. And I don't feel like I'm selling out if I don't have to if I'm told not to do a specific joke. You know, it's hard for me to – if it's my show where I have decided to do a show and I've hired the promoter and then someone says don't say something, a lot of times that might rub me the wrong way and go, well, it's my show I put together. And the people that came and bought the tickets, you know, kind of know what to expect. But if a promoter brings me to their country and says, listen, just stay away from these topics – first of all, I may not even have jokes about that topic.
Sure.
I mean, I remember when we first went to Egypt, they told us that someone from the Ministry of Information had contacted the promoters and was curious what our material was about. And they said the reason they're so sensitive is that a few months before, a journalist had written something about Hosni Mubarak looking older and they'd thrown him in jail. So I thought – well, I, in all honesty, I had no Hosni Mubarak jokes. So I wasn't about to, you know, just to push the envelope, turn around and go, I'm going to, you know, I'll show Hosni Mubarak. No, I thought, okay, I don't have any jokes about him in the first place. And secondly, they're throwing people in jail even if you mention them. So let me just stay away from the guy. So I think that you as a comedian, especially – hopefully you have a lot of material, so it doesn't, you know, it's not just about one joke. So I think you kind of navigate your way through and it's not about – and you're also not in these places to offend and push the envelope to the point where they're going to – you know, to where they're going to be uncomfortable and you're going to feel victorious. As a matter of fact, we were talking to a leader out there in 2007 who said, listen, just by being here, you guys are pushing the envelope. Because it was the first time stand-up comedy was really in the region. And the past 7-8 years, whenever I go back, there's now a big fledgling stand-up comedy scene all over the Middle East. And it's so amazing to watch it grow.
That must be incredibly exciting for you to see that grow. So you've performed in Oman, Jordan, Lebanon, Qatar. You have not performed in Iran.
No.
Would you like to, or is that just not possible? What's your thinking about that?
I would love to. There's two things that are holding me back. One is I believe that under the current regime, I probably could not do stand-up comedy in Iran. Mm-hmm. You know, during the Green Movement, I hosted some events that were pro freedom of speech. And I guess critical of what was going on with the Ahmadinejad elections. So that may be one of the, that's one of the big reasons. And the other reason that I'm not sure how well stand-up in Iran would do is that wherever you do stand-up, you need to have a big enough population of English speakers who speak it well enough to get the jokes. Now, I know that a lot of Iranians do speak English, but the question is there a big enough population that could come to a comedy show and get the nuances. The reason the stand-up comedy works in places like Lebanon and Egypt and Saudi Arabia and some of the other places is because, you know, there's an American University of Beirut, American University of Cairo, and these kids have grown up learning English and they know all the references. And that's a big issue. You know, even I couldn't do stand up in France because there might not be enough English speakers that speak it well enough that would come out to see my show and get the nuances.
Sure. And Maz, we've got a bunch of listeners who would love to get in on this conversation and ask you some questions. So let's go to a few of them. Nairi is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Nairi. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony.
Good to have you. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question for Maz, and it is, how would you have seen a place in this world if you were to live in Iran as an Iranian? Would you have found humor in your culture and embraced this visual dexterity which clearly defines you now?
That's a great question, Nairi. First of all,
thank you,
Nairi. Thank you. I always tell people that Iranians are big on humor, and it's a big part of the culture. And the difference is that Iranians are more joke tellers, so it's like the street jokes that we tell one another out here, whereas stand-up comedy feels like the current version, it's more a lot more an American invention where you go on stage and talk about yourself and reveal yourself to the world. So if I'd stayed in Iran, I strongly doubt I would be doing what I do right now. I may still have a sense of humor. I mean, I've always loved humor, but I probably would have, I don't know, taken over my father's business, or I'd be running some sort of business in a bazaar or doing property or something. I strongly doubt. This is not a – culturally speaking, it's not an option. When I told my Iranian parents in America that I wanted to be an actor and a comedian, they just stared at me with shock. You know, they're like,
they had a different idea. Did they imagine what the American dream was, become a doctor, do something like that, right?
Absolutely. I always say that a lot of immigrants come to this country through turmoil, and they set up shop and they want their kids to be lawyers or doctors or businessmen.
Yeah.
And so that's what my parents wanted. As a matter of fact, I studied political science undergrad, and I went to started a graduate program in political science at UCLA in hopes of pursuing a career that would make my parents happy, even though all along I wanted to get into the acting and the comedy. So that's my answer to Nairi.
I want to ask you more about what the transition was like when you came here as a young child, but I want to go to a couple more calls first. Let's go to Stephen, who's calling from Windham, Connecticut. Stephen, you're on the air with Maz Jobrani.
Hey, guys. You know, you're very funny, man, before I bring it down. I have family in Chapel Hill, and that case was so incredibly disturbing. I just can't express how disturbing that was. And, you know, in the United States, we've had a lot of great civil rights leaders that were Muslims. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, still living. Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X. And this case reminds me so much of Martin Luther King's eulogy on the Birmingham Street bombings. And I see first-generation American Muslims stuck in two worlds. And I just can't express in words what I feel.
Well, Stephen, it's a great subject to put on the table. And Maz Jobrani, I would like to ask you about this you know, three young Muslims, Muslim Americans shot last week in Chapel Hill. Tragic event, as Steve mentioned there. When something like this happens, what's the impact on Muslim communities in America? How do you feel about it?
You know, it breaks my heart. I mean, I personally am not that religious, to be quite honest, but I come from that background. I have friends that are Muslims. I have relatives that are Muslims. And the problem I have is it's not just with Muslims. It's anybody. When there's a hate crime against anyone for their beliefs, it just breaks my heart. And when I saw these young kids, I thought to myself, these are kids that might have been at one of my shows. And I've seen these types of kids that they're doing well. They're good people. And I know that right now they're investigating to see whether it was inspired by this neighbor's hate of Muslims, or if the neighbor, they're saying, a lot of people are saying that this guy was just angry at everybody. But that said, I have to believe in my gut that their being Muslim had something to do with him going that final step. And it's just heartbreaking. And you think that we're making progress. You think that with technology and the internet and all this stuff, we're making progress. But you see so much hate. You see so much closed-mindedness. And that's why, I mean, a big reason what I'm saying in this book, when I say I'm not a terrorist but I've played one on TV, I'm making fun of this image that Hollywood has put on us as terrorists. And I took that part early on. But I've stopped taking terrorist parts because I know that that's this image that is out there. And if we see that enough, then there are going to be people that are going to, in their mind, say, oh, it's okay to kill these people. So I know that I have a hand in some of that. And again, that's why I'm trying to counter it now with – I do feel we need to see the normalization of Middle Easterners and Muslims and Iranians and Arabs and Indians and Pakistanis. I mean, you know, people say when the Cosby when the Sopranos came out, that some Italians were upset. But I always say that they also had Everybody Loves Raymond. And we don't have the Everybody Loves Raymond, but we have all the negative stuff on TV. And so –
yeah, and I think part of what you do, which is really admirable, and I was really struck by watching I Come in Peace last night, is that you make the point that people are people everywhere, that there are people who do crazy, awful stuff, and some of them are Muslim and some of them are white Christians. Do you see a double standard about the way we talk about and respond to this stuff around the world?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. Like, for example, when this thing happened in Chapel Hill, I posted something on my Facebook page, and I didn't even go to read the comments because I feel that people on Facebook and on social media have become so vitriolic that I don't even need to read it. But I know for a fact that when I post something like this is tragic and racism still exists, you know, does exist in the United States against Muslims, somebody will come back and say, well, what about 9/11? Well, what about Charlie Hebdo? And I go, yeah, those were horrible too. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But it's not a competition. It's not to say that if I'm mourning the deaths of these three young, you know, Muslims, that I wasn't mourning the deaths of the people at Charlie Hebdo or the 9/11 victims. I mean, so it's unfortunate that people really get, again, vitriolic about it, and they try and jump on the bandwagon anytime there's something that is done by one Muslim. Like the thing in the Charlie Hebdo shootings, for example, I argued that those guys didn't represent Muslims. 99.99% of the Muslims that I know are regular good people just leading their lives. They would not condone the killings of these cartoonists just because they'd done cartoons about the Prophet Muhammad. They would be upset about the cartoons. They would take offense at it, but I don't think they would support those killings.
We are talking to Iranian-American comedian Maaz Jirbani about growing up in America. He performs all over the world. We're going to be coming back in just a moment. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. His new book is I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Imagine having a personal library with over 150,000 book titles, plus magazine and newspapers like the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Now imagine having a personal assistant read them to you, in the car, on the train, wherever you want. That's what it's like to have Audible.com. On Point listeners get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Go to audible.com/onpoint. Choose a free title and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. Get started today.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with a self-described Middle Eastern funny man. His new book is called I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Played One on TV. And Maz Jobrani, you know, you raised such a good point that I want to follow up with you on before the break. And this idea that 99.9% of Muslims around the world are peaceful, loving people who are just as appalled as anybody at atrocities like Charlie Hebdo. But here's my difficult question about that. People in the West might be forgiven if they say, look, I understand there are a billion Muslims in the world. And of course, the vast majority are peaceful. But lately, you know, whether it's 9/11 to Charlie Hebdo to Boko Haram to the Taliban to these gruesome beheadings by ISIS, it feels like such a huge share of these awful, terrifying events are being done in the name of Islam. So does the Muslim world have a particular problem that we need to talk about, even while acknowledging that the vast majority of Muslims, of course, are good and peaceful people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's it's almost like a hijacking of the religion. But I mean, it's an interpretation of the religion. I mean, if you look at it, a lot of these organizations that are functioning they have a bigger socio-political goal. They want to take over certain regions of the world. And they don't have the resources that the United States might have. We have the biggest military in the world. So we can deploy our troops and these guys have to act in a different way where they kidnap people and they behead people and they count on terrorism and the fear that they instill in people to push their goals forward. So I think that we need to also not be naive and realize that there's not a socio-political thing behind all of this. I mean, one of the best analyses I saw with the Charlie Hebdo attacks was Professor Juan Cole from University of Michigan, I believe, who said that the reason these guys went in and did what they did, just two guys were able to create such terror in all of France. Or maybe there was whatever. There was another two, obviously. So four guys, three guys and a girl. But their goal was, according to his analysis, that Al-Qaeda was having a hard time recruiting young French Muslims because a lot of the young French Muslims are very secular. They're not that religious. But by doing an act like this, there's going to be a backlash against Muslims in France, and that'll make it so some of the young Muslims in France are going to be easier to turn to radicalism. So this problem exists. I think that we need to look at the bigger issue. I think a lot of it is, you know, from things that I've read and heard is that some of these countries, there's young people that they go and they get educated and then they have nothing to do. So these organizations are the organizations that are providing them with anything to do and a mission and a purpose in life. The thing with Denmark that we just saw, the cartoonist that were attacked over the weekend, they're finding out that this guy was in a criminal gang. You know, it feels like the recruitment of these people are that are become radicalized. They're recruiting people that are easily radicalized. They're recruiting people that have maybe criminal tendencies that are lost. And so, yes, if you give them this contorted version of Islam, that they're going to be grasping onto it. But the question becomes, is it Islam that's the problem, or is it that there's poverty and mental illness and all these other issues that we're not dealing with that may stabilize some of these young people that are turning to radicalism?
Yeah, big questions, important questions. We're talking to Maz Jobrani, comedian and actor. Let's listen to a clip. Maz, I want to get us back on the sort of comedy route here. So here you are performing live in 2009. This is the DVD from the DVD Brown and Friendly, which you taped live in Hollywood. And you're talking about your wife, who is Indian, and your son, who is therefore Iranian, Indian, American.
The key is you got to give him a good name so that he doesn't get into trouble in America. And that's what we did. We gave him a good name. We named him Mujibur Muhammad Abdullah Rahim Osama bin Laden Jobrani. Because I need the material, you know what I'm saying? I'll be like, son, how was your day at school? You were deported. Fantastic. Work that into my act.
I love that. That'd give you some good material. Let's take some calls. Victor is calling from Cape Charles, Virginia. Victor, you're on the air with Maz Jobrani.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm a Christian Armenian, born and raised in Iran. for the first 20 years, I attended school and physical activities with all my friends. They were Muslims. 99% were Muslims. It's heartbreaking to hear and see what a handful of criminals do in the name of Islam. And I'm very saddened because majority of the population are loving, caring, respectful people. And this is not what we're supposed to think of religion, Islam as a religion. This is not it. But on a light side, I came to the United States in 1964, and I'm a U.S. citizen. I've been here for 50 years. Whenever I travel at the airport, most likely they're going to pull me to the side because my passport says born in Iran. It's an American passport, but I'm pulled to the side. So one time I asked, why me? And they said, sir, it's random. And I said, how come it's random every time I'm random? And yeah. We were in Spain. They pulled me to the side. They not pulled me to the side, but this time they pulled my American wife to the side. And she's yelling and screaming, not me. Him, he's from Iran.
That's great. Victor, I'm glad you put this on the table because I think Maz Jobrani deals with the same thing, right? You've got an American passport, says you were born in Iran.
Yeah, I have the exact same situation, and I had a similar thing. I actually said when I travel with my American passport, none of the Western countries have ever given me trouble. So England, Canada, U.S., I come and go as I please. The places I started having trouble was some of the Arab countries. And I do a bit about this, but it's true. I guess some of the Arab countries didn't or don't get along with Iran. And so every time I would go to Kuwait, they would stop me and they would interrogate me. And I had an American passport and I was there with other American comedians who would just go right through and they would always stop me and they would start asking me questions. You know, and I remember they would say, you know, what is your father's name? And I would be like, well, he's passed away, but his name was Khosrow. And then they go, well, what is your grandfather's name? And I'd be like, well, boy, how far back are we going with this? His name was Jabbar. He died a long time ago. And then one time the guy goes, okay, you wait. I'll be back.
Oh, boy.
And he walked away. I started freaking out because I don't know what kind of crap my grandfather was into, you know? Right. Thought I was going to get in trouble.
No, the bit you do about your passport is really funny because you're such a visual comedian as well. But you do this, and I'm not going to do it justice here, but it's like, are you kidding me? I've got an American passport. I mean, we've gone through all of this. I've got the passport, and it still says born in Iran. I mean, it almost seems wrong.
Yeah, I compare it to having bad credit where you think you paid it off, and then it comes up again. You know, I mean, listen, I'm proud of my Iranian background, and I love it. But again, as Victor was just saying on the phone, in a passport, it causes trouble.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
Better if it said Duluth or something like
Duluth,
that.
Duluth, exactly.
All right, let's go to Sanjeev. He's calling from Newton, Mass. Sanjeev, you're on the air with Maz Jobrani.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you for taking my call.
It's good to have you. What's on your mind?
I was just wanted to ask Mr. Jobrani if he could expand on one of his earlier thoughts regarding self-censorship. It seemed like it kind of fell into at least two categories. One is maybe doing it due to the fear of retribution and a lot of what censorship kind of leans towards. But then there's also this aspect of self-censorship, which I do believe exists and has a place, just because it's the morally right thing to do, you know, for example, not saying or doing things in front of young children, just because we as a society feel it's the right thing to do, and we all tend to agree on those things. So my specific question for Mr. Jobrani was what his thoughts were on the use of depicting Muhammad for comedy or satire, and if he felt it shouldn't be done, is it due to kind of his faith, or is it because of his understanding of the culture and he's, you know, sense that this is just not somewhere we as a society should go, and just to help non-Muslims understand that view.
It's a great question, Maz.
Yeah, that is a great question. You know, I personally, I'm 100% for freedom of speech. I think that people should say what they want, especially artists, you know, stand-up comedians should express themselves as they want. And I probably fall into the latter category they described, that I personally don't talk about some subjects because maybe it's because of the culture that I grew up in. You know, growing up, my mom was very much against us even cussing. And you know, I may make some references here and there in my show that there's some adult language in there, but for the most part, my stuff is relatively clean. And but that's just a choice that I made. I always tell people, you know, if you go to a comedy club, you got to be open-minded. If you're really offended by somebody, then you just walk out. And so the same thing goes for someone who's doing material about the Prophet Muhammad. If it really offends you, you don't have to buy it. You don't have to watch it. You can write letters. You can express yourself in many ways. But being someone who's living in America and seeing the lack of freedom of speech that exists in some parts of the world, including a place like Iran, I really got to stand behind freedom of speech and say, you know, it's a beautiful thing that we have, and we need to embrace it. But let the marketplace talk. You know, if you don't like it, then don't watch it, don't buy it, don't pay for it.
But if I heard, and Sanjeev is no longer on the line, but you know, thinking about the Charlie Hebdo massacre, I mean, of course, we want to uphold the freedom of expression and a free press, and it's really, really hard to say anything against that. On the other hand, it is a difficult question. I mean, to what extent should we be sensitive to the idea that depicting pictures of Muhammad, you know, are deeply blasphemous to people of faith? And like you said, there are certain things we have the right to say, but we don't say them in front of our kids. You know, where is our responsibility with regard to that? I mean, it's a tough question.
Listen, that's going to fall on different individuals in different ways. Like, for example, I personally, I don't talk about religion at all because it was not a big part of my upbringing. Mm-hmm. I don't like to make fun of people that are handicapped or that have some sort of mental or physical disability. I always feel like my job as a comedian is to either do self-deprecating stuff or go after people in positions of power. They always say you punch up, you don't punch down. So that's just who I am. But I cannot dictate. There is not a stand-up comedians union or a cartoonists organization that says you must abide by these guidelines. So no matter what I say, there's going to be someone who's going to go on stage and make jokes about the Prophet Muhammad. And so as a comedian, I feel like it would be hypocritical if I were to say to that guy, well, you shouldn't talk about that, but you can do jokes about Jesus. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do I draw that line? I don't know. And it is offensive to a lot of people. And so the only thing I can say to somebody like that is, listen, people take this depiction of the Prophet Muhammad very seriously, and you may lose some of your audience, maybe most all of the audience if you go for it. And I personally am not a fan of people doing material just to push the envelope. I actually find that to not be good at all. So I've seen comedians try to be edgy, but there's no punchline to the joke. And I go, well, good for you. You're edgy, but you're not funny.
Yeah.
And some of those cartoons kind of fell into that category for me. I didn't find them funny at all.
Maz, let's take a couple more calls. James is calling from Akron, Ohio. Hi, James. You're on the air with Maz Gibrani.
Hello, Anthony. There was a comment made just a moment ago that there was not any Everybody Loves Raymond counterbalance to the mafia portrayal of The Sopranos. However, I will point out that American Muslim Family on cable attempted to do that, but a number of politically driven groups pressured the sponsors to pull off the show because they said it was nothing but propaganda. Can I have a comment, please?
Was this the show, was it called All American Muslim? What was the show called?
I think it was American Muslim Family. It was on cable. It only ran for a couple of episodes, and the sponsors pulled out due to pressure because people said it was propaganda.
Right, right. I believe that show that you're referring to was called All American Muslim, but it's a great question, James. Let's put it to Maz Gibrani.
Yeah, listen, there's a couple of factors. First of all, there was that. There was in Canada, they had Little Mosque on the Prairie, which was a show about Muslims that did well. First of all, the question becomes, I didn't see that show, All American Muslim. So one question is, you know, how good is a show? And it's really hard for a show to be successful in the first place. So how good is the show? How well is it executed? And how many people are watching? That's number one. And then number two, you're right. All it takes is a little pressure group from either side to write the letters and scare sponsors. You know, I jokingly say that our God in America are the sponsors, you know, because I've had times when I had referenced certain brands in one of my jokes, and it was supposed to air on Comedy Central. And the producer said, listen, the material's all fine, but you can't say Mercedes or 7-Eleven or Slurpee because they might be sponsors. So it's a tough thing that we run into. And I think what has to happen is there has to be some kind of a show that has such an overwhelming response of just really being funny or really doing well where it's impossible for the sponsors to even back off. I mean, that's kind of what we need. It's going to be lightning in a bottle, but hopefully it'll come.
Well, Maz Jobrani, it has been such a pleasure to have you on Point today. Thank you so much for coming in. We're very, very grateful.
Thank you for having me.
That's Maz Jobrani. He's author of I'm Not a Terrorist, but I've Played One on TV. You should check out the Netflix show, I Come in Peace. It'll make you laugh. It's worth watching. And you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.